Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight, it's always a pleasure having him here, is writer, poet, performance artist Michael C. Ford. His latest book is Women Under the Influence, now, but there's a couple of new ones just coming out. And he also has a poem in the just-published anthology Dark Ink. Michael, welcome back. We, by the way, for people who are just tuning in, we've already been doing half the interview.
Hey, let me write that down.
There's so much to talk about. Before we get to the memoirs and all the other stuff, you have a number of new things coming into print. And the first thing I want to mention is you have a poem in this just-published anthology, which I thought was really a good anthology. It's called Dark Ink, a poetry anthology inspired by horror.
Now, did you get a copy of that? I don't even have a copy of that.
So you're not going to be able to read. I could read your poem in that. No, you have a great poem in that. Yeah, I do have a copy.
Well, that's good.
But you also have some other things coming up, and I wanted to talk to you about them. What's the War Chamber Ministry?
The War Chamber Ministry is, as you might imagine by the title, it's dealing with commercial warfare, which is what our government, our military is based on. So I'm dealing with that. A very brave publisher in New York, Foothills Publishing, is bringing it out this year. It's supposed to be out this year. I don't know. Have you talked to him yet? Have you?
No. I was just reading about it. What kind of format is it going to be like the format of Women Under the Influence? So it's not.
There will be the aspect of some prose introductions just to make the body copy more reader friendly. not in terms of explaining what is significant about the pieces that are in there, but just to give people a fresh idea of the source of where it came from.
So talk to me more about what it is. Like what are we going to be reading? Are we going to be reading pieces that you've written about this?
Yeah, about war, about famine, about confusion and destiny. It's essentially what I always do, no commercial appeal. You
know? Well, that's the good thing.
It'll be sort of on that level. That will be no surprise.
Famine, it's always a big seller.
Yeah, right, right.
But, I mean, are these pieces you wrote as a set? In other words, you had this project and you wrote...
They're recent pieces and pieces that go all the way back to when I was 15 in junior high school, and we were invited to write a poem. And that whole story, I won't go into it.
Oh no! Wait a minute! Whoa! That just opened up a whole Pandora's box right there. You in high school? I need to know about that.
Junior high school. It was the math teacher. Just very briefly, and I explain this. That's one of the prose intros. Okay. A math teacher was given. The principal assigned the math teacher to do an arc of poetry, and of course, it was a dismal experience. She was reading Evangeline by Longfellow to the consternation of all of us who were sitting there listening to this. Boredom, and they said now at the end of it, the end of the 5-day arc of poetry, we had to write our own poem. And of course, she was teaching everything was coming out of the British tradition. Okay. Even Robert Frost was rhyme scheming like the kind of poetry that you were seeing coming out of Stephen Spender.
Right.
Everybody was writing my car, my goldfish, my room, and I wrote the Korean War had just kind of dissipated,
God.
And Eisenhower had become the president and pacified Korea. So I decided I would write a 8-line doggerel called The Korean War.
Whoa.
And when that book is published, we can go on the air and talk about this, actually.
But I'm fascinated by this because that was a time period where there was
I was fascinated, too, because the McCarthy witch hunts were going on, and here I am.
Yeah, but you never brought that into the classroom because we're really close.
And the teacher gave me a D minus. That is very given to violence, and we don't. The other kids were writing these nice poems, and you come up with this, and this is not appreciated.
Wow.
And inappropriate. Wow. So I got chastised, and I vowed that I would never read another poem or write another poem or even think about poetry. Was anathema to me. And then 3 years later, I'm backstage with Kenneth Rexroth talking about what books I should read, and the rest is we talked about that. We talked about that whole association with Kenneth Rexroth, and 6 months later, Kenneth Patchen came down from doing the Black Hawk in San Francisco with the Chamber Jazz Sextet, and I was aware almost instantaneously that you could read words that made sense to people, and you could do it with music. That's all I needed to know, and the rest is... what I sort of pursued off and on until...
What's interesting about that story...
Until this dialogue that we're having right now.
That story actually really touches me because it really... Because we're about the same age. And I can remember the 50s. And it was not a great time to be creative.
No.
Especially in public school. And
well, I think I mentioned that my parents couldn't afford a television set.
I know. I just wonder how many other artists and poets were squelched, strangled in their cradle by teachers like that.
I'm sure. Well, I was. I wasn't for Rexroth showing up, and Jack Hampton, this booking agent in Beverly Hills, put this... sort of emporium of jazz concerts together with Benny Carter, who was booking Benny. He was also booking Buddy DeFranco, Scatman Crothers, Mort Saul.
Wow. Wait a minute,
Mort Saul and I were the only spoken word people to play the Vine Street Bar and Grill in the 80s. We were the only two. We were the only two spoken word people to play.
Mort Saul, again, that's one of those things you have to be of a certain age to appreciate what he did back then, because he was out there on the edge back in the early 60s.
Totally.
It was an amazing part. Yeah.
Well, you listen to stand-up comics now, and it's like Lenny Bruce never existed.
Right, exactly.
And it's soft, safe, and comfortable. With a lot of, now that the thing that Lenny did was he made it possible for them to use four-letter hybrids in every line of punchline that they could think of. And it's boring and embarrassing to me.
So when did you finally, I'm now getting really interested in your history. When did you finally find yourself then as an artist? How old were you?
I'm still looking.
Yeah, but
really? I mean,
but that's the search.
Mark,
that's
I have to be honest with you. I still think of myself as an apprentice. I'm learning every day about something, and I never will stop experimenting.
Sure,
and I'll never stop assimilating lessons from other writers, and it's just like I never know who my teacher is going to be the next day.
But see, that's the artistic mentality. That's the thing that makes you an artist, is that attitude, that bringing that to reality, that you're never going to be satisfied. There's always something to learn. But when did you develop that you found out that you captured that?
Well, I remember hearing Patchen reading and then the Chamber Jazz Sextet wailing on the back. I said, Kenneth Patchen's wife, Miriam.
Yep.
To whom he dedicated all of his books. She was standing there, and I said, Miriam, that's what I was 17, 18. I said, that's what I want to do. I want to write like that, and I want to have musicians like that backing me up. And now, 100 years later, look what's happened. Look at my catalog. It's pretty surprising, even to me. Wow. Did that really happen?
Is there any chance that there'll be more recordings? Your last recording, which is amazing.
Where do I go from there? How could I possibly do anything?
There has got to be a way to do it. And there's certainly artists, there's certainly musicians around that are up for that. I mean,
I like to do an album. I'd like to do a recording project where I read other people's work, people who need to be heard.
Huh.
That's one project I would like to do.
That's an interesting project.
Totally. Who's gonna bankroll that? You know.
But it's a great idea, though. It's a really good idea.
I like Jimmy Durante. I've got a million of them. I got a million of them.
Yada yada yada.
But you know, I like that.
Now that idea is like stuck in my head because it's a great idea. It really is a great idea. Jeez, I don't think I've heard anybody else do that either. I've never heard somebody.
No, probably not. Most writers want to just read themselves.
I understand that impulse, but okay. And now you've got other things that are being published by the end of this year too. And I want to talk about this. Beyond Baroque, as part of their 50th anniversary, is going to produce two chapbooks of yours.
They published a chapbook by Phoebe McAdams, who is from New York, by the way.
Yeah.
She's New York roots. She's a gifted writer, and she's now California based. And they published her chapbook, and they pulled on my coat. And they said, look, have you got a chapbook like Phoebe's? And I said, what I've got is I've got 15 pages of half a chapbook and another 15 pages of another half a chapbook that together would make 32 pages and exactly what you're looking for. And he said, what's the concept? I said, well, I wrote all of these pages were written in New York. Massachusetts. I wrote Block Island Latitudes on Block Island, 17 miles off the coast of Point Judith, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And I just went to the library on the island and just steeped myself in history of Block Island and wrote these unpublishable poems. None of them have been published, by the way. Yeah, but only now in this chapbook. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to put the two chapbooks together. And
the other one's called Manhattan Island Suite, right?
Manhattan Island Suite is one, and then you flip it over, and it's Block Island Latitudes, and all the pages were written on the East Coast.
I'm going to ask you about that, because when I think about you and I think about your work, I always associate you with West Coast.
Oh, of course, because when I was 3 years old, I left Chicago with my rents. I didn't have a choice. I was gone. I've been back to Chicago and, of course, reestablished some roots and wrote a lot of diary notes and journal entries about Chicago and what I remembered and what I've forgotten. You're right. I'm very much, because I was so young, I'm very much a West Coast kid.
You're a West Coast voice. I mean, when I look at Women Under the Influence, I mean, man, that's a West Coast piece right there.
Oh, yeah. And probably to the...
I just can't imagine you on Block Island. I can't imagine you doing the New England Island thing.
I rode the Block Island boat over there. I got there at night. And everybody was going to New Harbor. That's where the action is. The rock and roll rooms and the and the restaurants and the bistros and cocktails, dancing, you know, all that stuff. And I wanted to go to Old Harbor, and nobody was there. And so I got a room in the Surf Hotel for like $5 a night or something at that period of time. And it was just a wonderful experience. I never would have had it if I hadn't decided.
Wow.
An artist turned me on to it, showed me paintings she had done at Block Island. And I said, that would be a really nifty place to go. And maybe... study some of the history about Block Island and write about it. And that's exactly what I did. And of course, as I said before, it's all this unpublishable material, you know, and now it's actually miraculously, thanks to Beyond Baroque's 50th anniversary, is going to be a reality.
And I think that's supposed to come out.
It's going to be print product, Mark.
I know.
That's kind of far out.
And it's coming out, I think, before the end of this year.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out, and I'm doing they're doing the launch party, and guess who I'm reading with? Phoebe McAdams.
All right.
Perfect. New York chick, you know, and I'm reading my New York pieces, so it's going to be nice. It'll be a nice presentation.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest, it is always a pleasure to talk to him, is writer, poet, performance artist, Michael C. Ford. His latest book is Woman Under the Influence. He has a poem in the just-published anthology Dark Ink, and we've been talking about other projects that are coming out that he's been working on. Hey, can I ask you to read a piece
from... you got to Dark Ink before I did.
Because I've got info.
I kind of knew it was published.
Hey, you know, I'll tell you a couple of interesting things about it. First of all, it's really good. Second of all, and it's really good almost consistently throughout, but completely different voices. The other thing is, it's thick. It's a big book.
Yeah. I guess it would be. Yeah.
And so, it's got a cool EC horror kind of cover to it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and so it's
a horror piece I wrote. Yeah, mentions Vita Ann Borg.
Yeah, yes, it does.
Who was Margot Lane in the Shadow movies, right?
Oh.
Among other things.
Okay, I was going to ask you about who Vita was.
Nobody. I'm wondering. Yeah, I say it in the what I wrote. How many people remember who was and even care, you know? Those are the kind of people I like to write about, the people that everybody forgot.
Well, do you have your copy of Women Under the Influence there?
Yeah, I
cuz I wonder I was going to ask you to read your thing about Cleo Moore's last monologue. And that she strikes me as another one of those people.
She was. I talk about her in the intro. I just say, with perception beyond those of the more commonly recognized 1950s B-movie femme fatales, she is here presumed to speak. So it's really her voice. I always have an actress read this poem.
You do?
Because it's really a woman's voice.
It is.
It's Cleo Moore talking.
Can I ask
and
you?
And I wrote, remember I was sort of talking about the plays that were done at the Auxiliary Dog Playhouse Albuquerque? Jessica Osborne portrayed the Cleo Moore character. I didn't call her Cleo Moore in the play. I called her Trixie Honeymoon. And the title of the monologue is Trixie Honeymoon's Last Press Conference. And the Cleo Moore stanzas are part of that play. So I cannibalized this from Women Under the Influence. I cannibalized the Cleo Moore section and put it in the play. I can do that. I can plagiarize myself. You know?
I know. Who are you going to sue? You're going to sue yourself.
Yeah, right.
Cool.
I've done that before, though.
You've sued yourself. Can I ask you to read the Cleo Moore piece?
I could, yeah, okay.
Or let me give you a choice. Seeing as it's you, Or one of my other pieces that you haven't read yet is Maisie. And I'm totally into the Maisie flicks. And if you were to give a choice between Maisie and Cleo Moore, which one would you rather read?
Well, I probably Maisie would make more sense.
Okay.
Maisie, of course, you're talking about the Maisie movies from 1937 to 1945.
Yep.
She went to Louis B. Mayer, and she said, look.
We're talking Ann Southern here. By the way, for people who don't know, we're talking Ann Southern.
Yeah, Ann Southern. I never write something about somebody without sending them what I wrote. So they can see that I'm talking behind their backs, right, on that level.
Wait one moment. You always do this to me, Michael. So you sent Ann Southern Maisie?
Oh, yeah. I sent Dorothy McGuire what I wrote for her, too, and she showed up at the Vine Street, and I read that to her. She's sitting in the Vine Street Bar and Grill.
Oh, my God.
With Joanne Drew or somebody, you know. And I'm reading this thing.
Oh, my God.
And some women sitting in one of those tuck-and-roll red booths. It looks like a New York club. The Vine Street Bar and Grill did look like a New York club. And so I read it, and
did you hear back from Ann Southern?
Oh yeah, and I wrote to Marie Windsor also.
Jesus.
And she flipped out over it.
Michael, you've led an enchanted life.
Well, Annie was living in Boise, Idaho at the time. So I didn't see her, but Marie Windsor was living right up on Cherokee Road in Beverly Hills, and she said, come on up.
Jesus.
So
you realize that's...
We became friends.
Wow. Well, let's read...
I became friends with an actress probably the majority, 90% of your listeners will not...
Marie Windsor is fantastic.
Yeah, so
I remember Ann Southern as a kid because she had her own show in the 50s called The Ann Southern Show, and it was only on for like 3 years. And then it was
I mentioned that in a prose intro.
I think you mentioned that she was the awful voice of the car in My Mother the Car,
Unfortunately, it's the only thing they remember about her.
That's too bad. Because she was a great actress.
She was. One time, Lucille Ball was being interviewed, and she said, would you name your favorite comedic actress? Being one yourself, you have to have one that you look towards. And she's, without missing a beat, she said Ann Southern.
Jesus.
Bar none.
Well, wait a minute. Do you have it? It's on page 80. Do you have the book there?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, read it. Because if you don't read it, we're going to run out of time.
Oh, God, again?
Okay, just get into it.
Okay. Maisie, she knew what's shipshape every time. Remember Ann Southern in black and white, blonde and cool and resourceful and ding-dong doing Maisie, the wartime cinematic Rosie the Riveter. Chasing foreign agents, the leaders all had nasty Nazi accents, and big thug Brooklyn henchmen played by Nat Pendleton types to plant the TNT. Maisie takes off like a box office fuselage, as if she were some kind of whirlybird Panama Hattie. She's helicoptering, which isn't a word, by the way. That's a word I made up. She's helicoptering all the gods and spies in skies with Anahan inspiration. Yet, there is not magic Troy. No magic Helen blames the military. No startled Spartan knight. Maisie carries rivets in her aircraft jumpsuit, but for the war effort, turns into a chiffon horse of harlequin surprise, an alarming pirouette wearing spectator pumps, mail order from Fredericks of Hollywood. She walks into a room where madmen are plotting things far more sinister than a busboy strike at Metro. So, while first rung Esther Williams in a lush lagoon ballet helps you to forget the rack of World War II, there's Maisie in the second feature helping you remember. She was a B-movie series of comedy and espionage, making a citizen's arrest on all the Germans in Southern California. Now, the interesting thing about that is, all those Maisie movies that she did, she finally went to Uncle Louie, Louis B. Mayer's office, walked in and said, look, I can't do this anymore. And he looked at her and he said, Annie, you pay our rent.
Wow.
If we have a bomb with an Esther Williams flick, we pick up the rent from your movies. We can't afford to not have you do these films. That's what he told her.
And she cranked them out. I mean, she did. But she But that poem is just so on the money as far as capturing her on-screen presence. I love that film. I love that poem. It's not a poem. Yeah. It's a prose piece, but I love it.
Well, it kind of is. Yeah, well, it's kind of they look like poems because they have an uneven right margin and a flush left margin, but they're really kind of narratives, aren't they?
They're great. First of all, I hope everybody goes out and watches a bunch of Maisie movies. And you know what, Michael? We're out of time.
Oh, but we didn't even get well.
No, that's why you have to come back.
To be continued.
To be continued. Yeah. I think I'm going to bring you back when the chapbook comes out. We can read that, and then I want to talk about your memoir. But we're going to wait because we're completely out of time. This happens every single time we talk. My returning guest tonight is writer, poet, performance artist, Michael C. Ford. His latest book, which you just heard a small segment of, is just really wonderful.
Appreciate the time, Mark.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Women Under the Influence, get it. And again, if you want to see a great anthology of poetry, pick up Dark Ink. Michael, it's a pleasure as always.
Talk to you later.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.